providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope everybody enjoyed those first two segments with Richard Postma. We covered a lot, including metals and markets. In the last two segments here, we are going to shift our focus more to the energy sector, more specifically oil and natural gas, as we are chatting with Joseph Schachter, editor of the Schachter Energy Report, also writes the free report that is Eye on Energy that covers more the macro drivers, key news events for the energy sector. I also posted Joseph's most recent Eye on Energy report on our website on Thursday. So please, everyone, go back, have a read over that report, and consider signing up, because Joseph does have his conference coming up later this year that I have attended multiple times in Calgary. It is a one-day conference where Joseph does a couple speeches, and he features a lot of companies, a great mix of big and small companies, all with dedicated rooms and with the presentations where there is a Q&A period, rather than some of these conferences where the companies only get 10 to 12 minutes and that's all you hear from them. At Joseph's conference, these companies get a longer allotted time, and there is a moderator in each room where you can ask those questions. So to sign up for that conference, you can click the link in the weekend show posting, or you can also sign up for a quarterly subscription, which gets you two free tickets, and I will be there again this year. Joseph, before we get into your thoughts on oil and natural gas, just give everyone a quick little preview of that Schachter Energy Conference, please.
Yeah, my pleasure. We've been very fortunate to have some very good sponsors, including the TMX, working with us. And the TMX side is they do the clean tech side. So they have a lot of companies related to renewables and also to the raw materials needed for the renewables sector. So 10 of the 45 presentations and exhibitors will be from that side. And then from our side, we do the domestic E&P, international E&P that's based in Canada in terms of the head offices being in Calgary. We also have the energy service sector. This year, we tried to expand that. We've expanded into the pipeline energy and infrastructure and royalty side. And we have Topaz Energy as the first company that we've signed up to come this year. And we're hoping in the future years to have more. We've taken way more space. The presentations are 35-minute slots, 25-minute for the presentation by the senior executives, usually the CEO, and then a 10-minute moderated Q&A. And then we have a booth room set up, four of them, and we have slotted time slots where people can go have some food. We provide food all day, breakfast, lunch, snacks, and then they can go to the booth rooms and spend a lot of one-on-one time with the companies that they own or that they're interested in. And I think that's why our program has been so successful, is that FaceTime with senior management is getting harder. If you go to an AGM, most of the time they're virtual, and then they might have a 10-minute presentation, and then there's not much time to spend with the execs because everybody moves away or goes away after the AGM. So what we're trying to do is not only provide research on the companies that we like, which is right now, 38 companies, but also have FaceTime with the managers, mostly of the companies that we cover. And I think that's really the quality of the product that we have, where we provide a benefit to individual investors, getting them FaceTime with managements of companies we like.
Well, Joseph, I appreciate you breaking down the conference details for folks here and your approach to it and giving investors that FaceTime with these companies that you've vetted. Let's dive under the hood here, though, on some of the macro fundamentals for the energy sector. As far as oil, we'll start there, Joseph. It's always interesting just to get a read on what the projections for cuts were versus what the actual cuts themselves were. Where are the numbers coming in for oil? And I think Saudi Arabia has kind of jumped up and help fill a little of the gap, but what are the numbers as you know them now, Joseph?
So going to the oil cuts and why oil popped up almost to $85, OPEC said in May they were going to cut 1.2 million barrels of production. And then in June, for the months of July and August, and now for September, Saudi Arabia and Russia, OPEC Plus members, said they would cut by another 1.5 million. So a million of that was going to be Saudi Arabia, 500,000 of that was going to be Russia. So the data that just came out last week for July of 2023 showed that the overall cuts by OPEC were 836,000, of which 968,000 was Saudi Arabia. So Saudi Arabia cutting that million is right on target. The problem is that Russia was supposed to cut 500, and there was a lot of chatter about them cutting production and or sales from Western Russia, you know, in the Baltic Sea, because, of course, the sanctions and the countries weren't going to buy from them. So the number there was a decline of 300,000, which did occur. But on the eastern side of the country, production to China and India, and now they are the biggest supplier to India by far, and that increased production by 200,000. So the net was Russia only cut 100,000, and that's why there's some concern that the OPEC rhetoric of how many barrels are going to take off is not being followed. Just for an example, some of the countries that are smaller players increased production. Angola increased by 56,000, Iran by 68,000, Iraq by 40,000, and Venezuela by 37,000, and others were smaller numbers. So you really only had the Saudis really cutting, and then everyone else was taking advantage of the high prices because of their domestic needs for money. And we saw those numbers come out there. The key thing right now is China. China historically has been an importer. They produce about 4.5 million barrels. They consume about 15.5. So they need about 11 million barrels of imports, the biggest importing country in the world. With all of the problems we're now seeing coming on in there, the exports down significantly, imports down, which means including imports of oil, the consumer side being very weak, unemployment rising. You may have seen the report that in China, youth unemployment got up over 21%. And so the government decided, okay, we don't want to see those bad numbers. We're not going to report them anymore. But a lot of university kids coming out, they're saying 40% of them can't find jobs. So it's really showing you the slowdown that's going on in China. And you've got these real estate problems facing you again. If you remember going back 6 months ago, the biggest company there defaulted, and there was a lot of crisis then. The second largest company, which has $60 billion of debts that they can't pay, now is in that 30-day clock. So once they don't pay, there's a 30-day forbearance where, you know, they can't be pushed into bankruptcy. That is going to extend for a few more weeks. And at that point, I think we're looking at a more severe crisis. And that's why we've seen the Shanghai stock market come down. So on the oil side, I think we're going to see a little sloppiness, maybe even breaking $70, because once we get into September, the summer driving season is over. Just this week, the motor gasoline demand fell by 451,000 from 9.3 to 8.85. So the end of the summer driving season is coming. That number can come down to 6.5-7 million once we get into the fall. And so once we get into September, I think we may see the price of oil back off. Also, oil is very sensitive to markets, and if markets are weaker, which you can see is happening today or this week, the latter part of this week, where you had markets opening stronger and even into the lunchtime, and in the afternoon they fell apart. And I think we're looking at potential for the Dow to breach 30,000 over the next couple of months. And if that happens, that can also pull down the commodity board. So I think we're going to see another buy signal for energy. If you remember in March, we got those two buy signals on March 13th and March 15th. And we added, if you remember from the beginning of March, we were cautious. We only had 8 names on the buy list. We added 7 names on each of those days to 22. My guess is, and my expectation is, because of the my view that we're going to see some more general market weakness, and this past week, we saw days where the market opened strong or even at lunchtime rallied, but by the end of the day weakened. I think we're going to see markets weaken into maybe sub 30,000 level between now and October or so. And I think we'll get another buy signal in late October. And I expect I'll probably be adding another 5 or 10 names to that action buy list of ours. So that would go from 22 names probably to over 30 names, which just tells you how bullish I am when I'm only covering 38 companies.
All right. Well, Joseph, one more quick question then. Just on oil, let's talk about in the U.S., the SPR, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. I've read that this is starting to get refilled. How much impact could this have on price? And give us an update of what this moving number has been with this SPR refill, please.
Yeah, the SPR had an increase, this past week of 600,000 barrels to 348 million barrels. But the market is looking at the fact that it was 112 million barrels a year before, 461 million barrels. So they're looking at it from the point of view of, we still have a long way to go. But if you take into account the number of days of imports, which is really the issue for China, because they import, as we talked earlier, 11 million barrels a day, the U.S. produces 12.7 million, up 100,000 barrels, because they're doing more longer reach wells, which are higher productivity. And that's up from 12.1 million a year ago, so 600,000 barrels a day increment because of longer reach horizontals, mainly in the Permian, Eagleford, et cetera. So that's 12.7. Liquids natural gas is 8.8. So in total, you're looking at 21.5 million of domestic production. And you compare that to domestic demand, which is 21.7 million. You're looking at 200,000 barrels a day of net imports. So you compare that to the strategic reserve, and it's a very high number. So remember, going back just a few years ago, the U.S. was only producing about 8 million barrels of domestic oil and 6 million of liquid natural gas, so 14 million. And that's why you needed those higher numbers of strategic reserve. Now that you don't need as much and you just look at the days of inventory related to imports, the U.S. is sitting in a very good position. But putting in small amounts to rebuild the reserves over time is the right thing to do. And you also want to take advantage of weaker commodity prices when you can to fill the strategic reserve.
Well, Joseph, appreciate getting the update on the oil side of the equation. Before we jump into some of the individual companies, let's also quickly get an update on the natural gas side of the equation, because we still get a lot of interest from listeners trying to play some of the companies or the sector ETFs for nat gas. And it's still staying in the mid twos here. I think it's around 260 at the time of this recording. Do you anticipate nat gas picking up towards the end of this year as we head into the winter, or what's your outlook on the nat gas market?
Well, nat gas today, I think, is trading around 260 for NYMEX. The big issue is the reason we saw, the price move to $3 is the Australian producers, Chevron, and I can't recall the other company name, are having a strike. And so you've got two of the two large LNG producers that are providing 11% of world capacity are on strike. And so we saw European prices bounce 20-30% because of that, and we had a push to $3 in the U.S. That's now backed off in the U.S. And so I think, we're going to probably meander around here. But once we get into hurricane season and you have the risk of U.S. offshore production in the Gulf of Mexico shutting in, I think we'll punch through $3. And then I think once we get into winter 2023-24, remember, you look at this summer, we had massive amounts of fires, massive amounts of rainfall, flooding in a lot of different places, dikes are breaking down. So it tells you that with this El Nino, there's a lot more moisture coming into play. And so if we have a lot more moisture in the winter months, that of course means snow. And so I think we're going to be looking at a lot colder winter 23-24 than we had last year. And that will give us a boost in the NYMEX prices to the $354 range and maybe spike higher when you have a big draw because of a very cold week. So I'm very optimistic about natural gas. The majority of, when you look at the E&P names on our buy list, we have a disproportionate number of liquids natural gas producers on that list. Many of them are paying fabulous dividends, yielding 8 to 10%. with very decent and strong balance sheets. So we think there's a lot of great buys out there, and many of those companies will be coming to our conference to speak on October 14th.
All right, Joseph, let's get into a few of the oil companies then. More of a earnings recap, because we have a lot of the earnings out from the energy or oil companies. And look, there's no denying that the oil price is lower than where it was last year all through Q2. These companies, stock price-wise, they have pulled back, but they're doing okay. They haven't broken down by any means. What did you see? What were your takeaways from more of the earnings out of the oil companies?
When you look at the companies, you have two issues. One, production volumes were down, part of it related to lack of capital investment. Also, the issue of the forest fires. So in the Grand Prairie, Drayton Valley area, a lot of companies had to knock off production for, you know, quite a bit of the quarter, of the second quarter of 23. But the other more important thing for me is the price comparisons. WTI a year ago during Q2 22 averaged 108.57. This year it averaged 73.99, down 32%. So you can see, you know, if your volumes were flat and you had 32% less revenues, you're going to show lower cash flow. AECO natural gas a year ago was 6.27 for Q2 22. It was 2.35 for Q2 23, down 63%. So you did see a lot of lower numbers that were because of those two reasons. But going into later this year, if I'm right that we see a winter that's going to be normal or colder than normal, I think we'll be looking at over $90 WTI versus the, you know, the $73.99 of Q2. That'll give you a boost up in with Q4 numbers. And then that 235 for AECO could be 3 or 350. So I think Q4 will be the turn. Q3 will probably be similar to what it was in Q2. But Q4 will show significant revenue and cash flow growth. And the markets will react to that when they start reporting in March, April of 2024.
Well, Joseph, are there any companies that you think would really have more torque to the upside in that kind of environment where we do see WTI prices north of $90 and that growth in the price? Are there any companies set up to grow exponentially in that kind of a price rise environment?
I wouldn't use the word exponentially, but I would say materially, you know, 20, 30, 40% increases in cash flow, maybe 10% increases in production. So, you know, you can look at things like, you know, Crescent Point, you know, Tourmaline Oil, Vermilion Energy, now that they've got, you know, the Irish position on board, you know, the Carib thing. Whitecap should show some growth. Crew, of course, NuVista, Obsidian. So, you know, Pinecliff, you know, would be cash flow growth, maybe not so much volume growth. So and Surge Energy. So there's a lot more companies even than that. But I think that, you know, you need to decide, are you looking for capital gain? Are you looking for capital gain and some income? Or are you looking for a lot of income and some capital gain? I think each of those parameters tells you where you need to look for your purchases. And that's, of course, what we cover in our reports.
So, Joseph, in terms of that income component then, any companies out there that you can highlight for us that have dividends that, first of all, are attractive or maybe higher than the average for oil companies, are growing their dividends, or you think really offer kind of the best income options out there?
So Birchcliff is paying 20 cents a quarter, 80 cents. It's a 9.7% yield on my run from last week. Then you go to names like Canacol Energy, which is a Colombian natural gas stock, 8.5% yield. Pinecliff Energy, a natural gas stock in Canada, Western Canadian, you know, Southern Alberta production, 9.2%. There's Alvo Petro, 7.3%, which is in Brazil. Hemisphere Energy, a name that you guys know very well. Don Simmons' company pays a dime, 7.7% yield. So, and then some of these pipeline and infrastructure companies are now providing 7 to 8% yields. Just to give you some examples, Enbridge on my run, 7.2%, TC Energy, 7.6%. And, you know, those are pretty healthy numbers for people who want total return, because if you can get, you know, 5-10% capital gain plus those dividends from those big companies, that's a pretty good total return when the markets aren't really doing that much this year.
Joseph, I'm glad you brought up the energy services and pipeline companies, because we've actually had a lot more interest on our site and just in messaging on other sites about the oil services side of the business and the pipeline side of thing, not so much the drilling where we've seen a reduction. What's your overall outlook on energy services? And do you think that even if prices stayed level, that they could still win big because most of the pipelines are pretty full?
Well, you know, remember, Coastal Gas is coming on, so that's going to help TC Energy once that happens. Plus, they're going to do the spinoff of the liquids business. Topaz, which is a royalty company, you know, is growing and making acquisitions. So, you know, we like those. We have on our buy list, you know, names that are in the energy service sector, be they the frackers or the drillers or, you know, companies that provide support services to the to the E&P companies. So when people look at our buy list, who are subscribers, they're going to see that there's a nice mix of companies that we have. We put on our list what the recommended buy level is. So if the stocks have had a little bit of a run here with this $85 price, we say, well, be patient. We think they're going to back off to these kind of recommended buy levels. And then we give you a one-year target, and then we provide what we think is the bull market peak, because a lot of our individual investors want to know, okay, you know, if I buy it at the right price, what am I looking at for the next year? But really, more importantly, if I want to hold this for the cycle 3, 4, 5 years, because I think we're going to see all-time high prices in oil before the cycle is over because of the lack of capital investment. And if you really want this renewable world, then you're going to have to bring on a lot of lithium, copper, nickel, in, you know, places all around the world, in Africa and Asia, and they're going to want a higher standard of living, and they're going to need a lot of, you know, crude oil and natural gas to produce the raw materials so we can have wind power and solar power and, you know, all the things that everybody is hoping for to build the renewables capacity. And so I think that the bullish cycle, you know, like we had a cycle from 99 to 08, I think, you know, we're probably maybe like 2002, 2003. And I think the best years were the 03 to 08. I think 2024 to nearly the end of the decade are going to be some very robust years, because you're going to have two things happening. One, you're going to have higher commodity prices, which means more cash flow. But more importantly, you're going to have a higher valuations. Companies now are trading maybe below PDP, proved developed producing reserves, usually in bull markets. At the end of it, they trade over 1P, and the companies that are, let's just say, the favorites of the street can trade equal to their 2P level, which is their proved plus probable reserve values. So the difference between the level they're trading today and that 2P number is significant right now based on today's commodity prices. But as the value of the reserves goes up, that PDP just pops up significantly, and that's how you get 4, 5, 10 baggers in a cycle like we did in 99 to 08. And I think from the bottom of 2020, we've already had some significant upside, but some of that's been given back over the last year with the market correction. I think there's still much higher levels to look at between now and the end of the decade, and I'm thinking doubles, triples, or more. So it's a fascinating group to be involved in. You want to do your homework. You want to find out what your risk profile is. Do you want large cap, small cap? Do you want dividend income as well? But there's a whole matrix of great names to own, depending upon what you as the individual investor have as your investment requirements.
And you want to go to your conference, right, Joseph? Listen to these companies. Talk with them. Talk to management. I will be there. And as I mentioned, I will post a link below this weekend show posting interview where you can sign up for that conference. Joseph, thank you very much for your insights on the energy sector. We will follow up with you next month to get an update and to even hear more about that conference. So if anyone has any follow-up questions for Joseph or wants us to bring up any companies, as always, you can email us. We love hearing from each and every one of you. We also really appreciate all of you tuning in to this weekend show. Please keep in touch with us through email, and please be sure to check back over our website and podcast to listen to all the daily editorials recorded throughout this week. Joseph, everybody else listening, Thank you all for taking time with us on your weekend.